Welcome back to Jump Scare. I'm Betty.
And I'm Shad.
This week we covered Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
The boy murdered Silas, buried his body in the field, and dragged Molly from the house, hanging her in the farm's apple orchard.
How much cardio I have to do. It's ridiculous. There's that whole thing of making it look like you're walking. And everybody else is running their asses off.
Everybody thinks we just wake up one morning and start obsessing about a girl and start stalking her, killing everybody that gets in the way.
That does seem to happen a lot with you guys.
That boy, he's going to be the best yet.
There are 11 exits from the first floor, another 8 or 9 that might be manageable from the second floor. All the obvious weapons, I sabotage.
Why are you doing this?
We're not gonna have this conversation.
Oh, why? What, you
get in the van.
You have no idea who you're dealing with.
So how will this play out? How will this work?
You won't like what you see. I promise you that.
I'm so happy.
Make sure you're getting this.
Go!
Oh, start up.
What we got filming those cameras, boys?
I cannot stand here and let this happen.
Don't you get it? We're in this now. We're part of his equation.
We're right where he wants us. All of us.
You have to tell me. What happens to me?
According to Podbean, this is our 100th episode.
Woo, fireworks.
According to iTunes, this is like 102.
So we're not sure what's going on there, but we're going to call this one our 100th.
100th episode. We've been doing this for 100 times.
Almost every week. So about 2 years.
Almost every week, yeah. So thank you for joining us. We really appreciate those who have come back to listen our rants and spoilers and discussions about the films that we watch and love slash dislike. This is one of our personal favorites, considered to be a cult classic, came out in 2007.
Still can't believe this one never got a sequel.
Yeah, they tried. They did like a you know, donation thing.
And all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, something like that. And they were only able, they needed like close to $500,000, and like 900 people donated like $185,000. So they didn't meet the goal.
Yeah, it sucks because it's one of those things that they'll look back on it all these years later and be like, oh, they really should have made that.
This is something that Netflix might be interested in because they have been known. I mean, they did Gilmore Girls. That has obviously a huge following, and they did that sequel or continuation years after the fact.
And I guarantee this could be done for a lot cheaper than the Gilmore Girls could.
Definitely. And the writer, Scott Glosserman, and the writers of this, Scott Glosserman and director David J. Stevie, he's directing a movie for Netflix, like joined with the director from Tucker and Dale, Eli Craig.
Oh, yeah.
So if that's successful and it's like going to be like a horror comedy, who knows if maybe he'll be like, hey, wink, wink, I have this other thing. I did read a interview with him saying that, you know, definitely the script would have to be redone because there's a lot of things they had in the script that are now outdated.
Yeah, and then plus I know that what the script that they had talked about when I saw Scott Wilson at a convention a few years ago, he was still in the script and he had a pretty large part in it this time. So they'd have to rewrite that or rechange the, you know, drop the character or recast him. But I'd rather they just kind of drop it because he did such a great job.
He did. You can't replace Scott Wilson. So that brings us to the other recognizable people in the film, which are Zelda Rubinstein or Rubinstein from Poltergeist.
Yeah, there's no way you can ever forget her once you see her. She's in your mind forever.
And Robert Englund, dot, 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 wink, wink. Not going to tell you where he's from because you should already know.
I think everybody now when they clean their house is probably like, does the Zelda Rubinstein voice, this house is clean.
We're going to have to upload that. So then when I clean the house, we have that playing in the background.
All right.
And then you have newcomer Nathan Basil, who plays Leslie Mancuso / Vernon. Not to give too much away why he has last names, but
there's
he
things.
Has last names. There's things. And then the last person is
Angela Goethals, whose claim to fame is
the sister in Home Alone.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still mad she didn't take out Macaulay Culkin when she had the chance.
Oh, gosh. Well, synopsis of the movie. This movie is set in a world where all horror icons exist. They're part of, you know, history, kind of like serial killers. And we are taking the journey with Taylor, played by Angela, who's a female journalist who documents the preparations of Leslie. And yeah, and then there you go, the rest of the movie. We're gonna leave that kind of blank for you because I don't want to spoil the movie for those who haven't seen it.
Because if you haven't, you definitely need to see it. If you're a horror fan, this one will hit all the sweet spots.
Yeah, I know some people that don't like it. We love the film.
I think if you grew up on all the 80s horror movies and you saw all these tropes used over and over again to the point that you were recognizing them, and all of us feel a little bit like Randy in Scream, where we're all watching the things, pointing out the tropes. No, don't do that. When you watch this, it's like you're back to that time again where you're like, oh my God, this is when they did this. Oh, I remember when they did this. Yeah, you get really excited watching this because you remember all the times that you watched hundreds of terrible horror movies. I've seen so many bad horror movies that I don't even remember, but yet I remember little pieces from them, you know, just a little bit. And you see something and go, oh, that was from that one movie. God, what was it called? Yeah, so I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, this one, it gives you kind of like the behind the scenes to the off-screen things that killers may be doing or actually do before the big event. And the big event obviously is the final film. Like when you finally get to see the film, it's like, okay, because you're always thinking, like, for me, what is Michael Myers doing November 1st to like October 30th? Like the whole year, what's he doing? Is he going shopping? Does he take the mask off? Is he living a normal life? Like what? I mean, you know, some of the films do show like where he gets like, he flows downstream and gets caught.
And I have a lot of questions about that one too.
By the blind man, you know, living on the fucking side of the canal or whatever. Yeah, okay. That they did fill that loophole in the movie. But this film kind of gives you that behind the scene of like how they get to like prepare and all that stuff.
Well, you got to think of it like the movie is the marathon and this is all their training for the marathon.
For sure.
Especially, you know, since all these guys have got to do a lot of cardio, as they point out in Leslie Vernon, it takes a lot of cardio to make it look like you're not running when you are.
Yeah, which is a deleted scene.
But yeah, I love this because we've always made jokes about like myself and every other horror fan about like, how do these guys manage to do this stuff? How is he up? He was at the bottom of the stairs and now he's at the top. How the hell did he do that? Or, you know, what? How does he able to slow his heart rate down? When did he learn to do that shit? When he was in the hospital watching the soap operas? What happened?
Oh my God. Okay. Well, the style of the movie goes from documentary to cinematic. Yeah. So it's not the whole film. It's up to a certain point when it moves the focus, and that's when the crew that's following Leslie become part of the movie.
And yeah, they do little breaks from here and there where it's, you know, they kind of break from the documentary part of it to where they're just all standing around talking and you see it from everybody's point of view. But I think one of my favorite parts of it is when he's explaining how to do the trick where the person comes outside and gets a glimpse of the killer and then the door shuts. He's explained how you do all that with fishing line tied to the brick where it's very hard to see in the night, and you just jerk it quickly with your hand while they're not looking, and it closes the door. When they turn around, you're gone. And then, like, did she see me? Did she not? She's not sure. I loved that because it's just such a standard thing in all the horror movies where they catch a glimpse of the killer. Oh, did I see that? Oh, I don't know. Yeah, you did. Because unless you're taking drugs, when you look up and see a guy in a mask with a knife standing on the street corner, you saw that shit, okay? Don't doubt yourself. Believe in yourself.
Well, this goes kind of hand in hand with the whole, you know, him preparing for everything, because that right there may have been part of the sleight of hand Copperfield and Houdini that he was reading, you know. So learning how to, like, pull a trick, basically, where it's, you know, you think it's this thing, but it's really this other thing that's happening.
Yeah, he had a very interesting library.
Yeah, he's like, she goes and she's like, wow, you have such extensive literature, and there's all these manuals and textbooks, and she's like, Grey's Anatomy. He's like, I'm not reading that for fun. Like, who would read that for fun? And I'm just like, why? This is fucking awesome. Like, I love that that's something that, because when you stab someone, like, you, if you know exactly where to stab them, they're gonna incur the most damage.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, fuck, you're getting stabbed, so you're gonna get hurt. But if I could stab you right in the right place, you're probably not gonna make it to the hospital.
Yeah, then you only have to stab once as opposed to multiple stabbings.
Exactly. This is one and done. We don't have time to, like, this is not a passion kill. I'm not trying to put, like, 135 fucking stabs into you. I gotta go slash and dash. Slash and dash. That's my new,
new restaurant.
Band. Or my new restaurant, yes. I would eat the slash and dash. Sounds delicious. My favorite line from the movie is, I only keep pets I can eat.
He has two pet turtles. So that's an interesting choice of things that he can eat.
Which are named from Pet Sematary.
Yeah, he's got Church and Zoe, which is from, of course, Church is the cat from Pet Sematary 1, and Zoe was the dog from Pet Sematary 2, which that's probably the only time in movie history someone has referenced Pet Sematary 2. I don't even think the people involved with it referenced that movie.
It's one of those things like, well, to go back to the whole turtle thing, that actually kind of goes in line with the urban legend that is Leslie Vernon that's going around, because it's part of his, like, backstory. And you don't really see the thing about that. There's so many, for me, there's so many possibilities, because you learn that he has a dual identity. Is it real? Is it not real? Shad and I kind of have, like, a different view on it. Not to give too much away, but is he overtaking someone else's identity, or was he the person the whole time? And there's just little things here and there in the film that I would like to think, because he is so clever, and he's a very clever character. He's unlike any killer that you've seen on film, like, slasher-wise, because he's charismatic. He's more of, I would say, a serial killer without him being a serial killer yet.
Yeah, this is the guy. This is the guy that everyone meets and then says, "Oh, that couldn't possibly be him," when they see him on the news. Like, no, he's a nice guy. He lives next to me. He helped me carry my groceries one day.
Exactly. He's definitely this guy, and he wins the film crew over big time. Like, they think he's, like, the coolest fucking guy, and he's showing them all this cool stuff. But at the end of the day, his objective is to kill innocent people. And these people are along for the ride. Like, halfway, like, when the shit gets real in the movie, you're like, do they know that they're accessories to murder? Because they're going to have to do something.
Yeah, that's like being, I was the guy that was walking around with Michael Myers, and I kept his knives clean for him. But I didn't really kill anyone. I just kept the knives clean.
Yeah, and it's like, you should have probably gone to the cops, because you knew that those knives were really bloody. He just wasn't cutting up, you know, a cow.
Yeah, like, that was the thing that kind of bothered me. Like, these people are around knowing that there was going to be, like, multiple homicides, and they were going to be involved.
Now, he has different steps and to prepare himself. There's certain things that he has to do.
He has a definite plan.
Yes, he definitely has a plan. He finds a target group, which is going to be the group that is going to be the people that he's going to kill, right?
Yep.
And, of course, like in all things in the target group, you have the stoners, the you jocks. Have the jocks, and then you have the chicks.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, like the cheerleader camp he was going to, or a group he was talking about.
And you have the survivor girl who has to be a virgin. And you have the red herring who's the first person he's going to kill.
But you know, this is the thing that when he said about the virgin, I can't hear that when they say they want to kill a virgin now, that line from What We Do in the Shadows always comes back to me when he said, when the film crew and that asking, why do you always have to kill a virgin? He's like, well, when you eat a sandwich, don't you prefer that no one has fucked the sandwich before you eat it? So I always think of that now when they're like, well, why did they always go after virgins? That's in my brain forever now. I can't get that out of my head. That movie has forever ruined the virgin killing, because now when they say it, I'm like, they're like, oh, he only kills virgins. I'm like, oh, he doesn't want his sandwich touched.
You have the Ahab. That's everything that's good in with humanity. And then you have the exercise regimen, you know, that he's going to obviously need cardio.
To go back to the Ahab, he's so thrilled when he finds out he has an Ahab. He has to immediately tell his friends, Eugene and his wife, that, oh my God, I have an Ahab. And they're like, oh, congratulations, you've got an Ahab. That means you've made it. They're so happy that he's got the Ahab. And he has to tell them, like, no, the Ahab is the guy that's obsessed with stopping you. That means you really made it and you're dangerous when you got a guy that's going to give up his whole life just to stalk you and try and stop you. That's how you know you're a success.
This person is Doc Halloran, wink, wink. And he's played by who we mentioned before, but we didn't really give his character name, Robert Englund.
Yeah.
And he's wearing a trench coat and the whole fucking shebang. I mean, he looks freaking amazing.
He went into Donald Pleasance's closet and just stole all of his clothes after they were done and held on to him.
I like that he's really early on in the movie in the background, and no one knows who he is until way later.
Yeah, he's just roaming around in the back of the... You're like, is that Robert Englund just walking around back there?
It's like, what is he doing in that diner?
That's it's like weird. It's like you're at the horror convention, and then you're like two buildings down, and you're like, is that Robert Englund? Because it could be. He's in the neighborhood, but I don't know.
They didn't show Leslie do this, but they did show Eugene, Scott Wilson's character. And he gets... When they first meet, the crew meets Scott Wilson. He's like the I was gonna say karate
the mentor.
Yes, he's the mentor. Thank you. Karate Kid came out of my fucking mind. He's the mentor to Leslie. He's in like a sleep deprivation chamber.
Sensory
deprivation chamber. And to slow his heartbeat and to make it to practice looking dead.
Yeah. And he's buried, by the way, in the sensory deprivation chamber. He's buried like 6 feet under the ground.
His wife was so nonchalant, like, oh yeah, he's just out back. She forgot how long he had been. He had been there for days. And she completely forgot about it. It was just like, oh yeah, he's going to be fine because, you know, he's just practicing. He's just doing his thing, which... He does get asked by Angela, like, why are you still doing this? And he's like, you never know, like, when you need to be ready. Like, it's something I just have to keep doing.
That would be interesting if they do a sequel to this, to be to focus on her character, the wife, because she's so nonchalant about everything, and she's just like, oh, yeah, he's out there doing that. What has she been doing for the last, like, 2 days that she hasn't realized her husband's gone? I think maybe she's out doing her own murdering and shit that we just didn't see about.
Well, there's definitely something wrong with her because she was one of his victims. Well, yeah. Quote unquote, obviously she survives, but...
She was one of the people he was trying to kill. So.
It's a weird relationship there.
But that, I guess ties in with like the Ted Bundy thing where, you know, people that knew he's a murderer and they're all like, oh yeah, he's pretty hot. Oh, I'd marry that guy.
Oh my God.
You're like, really? First of all, no. Secondly, no.
They never say who Scott Wilson's character is. They never say Eugene's character. Like, he mentions some things here and there. He did his killings in the 60s and 70s. They showed that he was really good with a knife.
He never got a sequel.
There's a talk about like sequels and like, you know, Road Killers don't really have sequels. They just have like one-offs.
Yeah, he said how like, oh, Michael and Jason, they really stepped it up. They just kept coming back year after year and just really putting the fear of God in people. And he was very impressed by the fact that they came back year after year. His were all like he killed and then moved on.
Yeah, he was one and done. He was off. And he mentions a sorority. So, you know, it's thought on the net that it may be Billy from Black Christmas, but I don't know. I was thinking more of the aspect, maybe he's one of these serial killers in our, like, actual history that were never caught. And this is him, like, it's one of those serial killers that just went off and like lived a life after and just moved on, as opposed to being a fictional one, because there really isn't any horror slasher from the 60s. The 70s, obviously, yeah.
And I always kind of wondered if he wasn't supposed to be just kind of an amalgam of some of the older characters, like, you know,
for sure,
Billy and like the miner from, you know, My Bloody Valentine that never got a sequel. Some of these people where it was like a one and done movie, and he's just kind of supposed to be like some of them, like, hey, you know, I did a bunch of shit, but it doesn't get remembered that often because I didn't get a sequel.
Yeah, you know, when I first saw the movie, I was so giddy because I loved everything about it. And then I showed it to my sister and her boyfriend and they were like, meh. And I don't...
There's no worse feeling than when you're like so hyped up for a movie and you show it to someone, they look at you and go, yeah, that was great. You're like, oh, fuck, they hated it.
Yeah, I can get how someone might be like, oh, that's been done so many times. But really, it's 2007, so it hasn't really, I mean, meta, that wasn't even a thing then. Like, it was, but it wasn't, like, in a trend. And, you know, Scream, obviously, is the first to, like, have all the horror tropes and, like, do that kind of thing.
But one was really unique where all the killers were real. Scream, everything was just fake. It was all just movies that people had watched. This was the first one that I've ever seen or ever heard of where all the previous, you know, all the movies were real. There was a real Chucky, a real Jason, real Leatherface. All these things really happened, and everybody knows about it, and everybody lives in fear of these areas. I talk about how, like, in Springwood, Illinois, no one will talk about it. And they had the brief cameo with Kane Hodder at the Nightmare on Elm Street house, like, going and shutting the door and not talking to them.
Yeah, and then they do show, that's right at the beginning of the film where they're, the reporters, you know, discussing, letting the audience know that this is a world where these people do exist, and she's visiting these places. Because the movie was filmed in California, so this is like Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, like, that's on the road right there where you could just get these shots and be in the thick of things. And you're like, okay, that's great. It's not fake, you know, whatever. There's a rabbit in red, obviously, they had to fake that because I'm sure that's not a real place. And if it is, wink, wink, that'd be amazing. So that part's really cool to see those places because you recognize them. You're like, oh my gosh, that's a real place, you know? So I really do like that. That's one of my favorite things about the film. And it doesn't beat you over the head with it. It's very just as is. Like, you're just going with the flow. It's not like, you know, there's Easter eggs in there, but it's not like Easter egg, Easter egg, Easter egg, horror trope, you know. I didn't feel like I was being bombarded by it.
Some of the people, their names are very subtle. Like, we have the librarian that Zelda Rubinstein plays. Her name is Mrs. Collinwood. Now, that's just a normal sounding name unless you've ever watched Dark Shadows. Then you know that Collinwood was the name of the town where the whole series was set. So that's an interesting one because not everybody's going to get that one. And like you said, they don't beat you over the head with it to the point that it's so obvious. Like when they're in Eugene and his wife's house, just sitting on a table kind of off to the corner where you barely even notice it the first time you watch it is one of the lament configurations. Just a little Hellraiser box just sitting there on the table. And you're like, oh, okay, so they've dabbled in that shit. Or they're keeping it around just for a decoration. I don't know, but it's cool that it's there and no one ever calls attention to it. It's in the background.
If this is a world where those things, where these horror icons are real, then with having the box there, then the box is real. Therefore, the Cenobites are real. Are the Cenobites coming to dinner? This is what I want to know. Like,
Yeah, this is a whole new level of guess who's coming to dinner if you're inviting the Cenobites, because that shit's going to be crazy. I see how they dress. I don't want to know what they eat.
Oh, yeah, that's probably not going to be. And they're like in the middle of nowhere, too, so they're probably having maybe like a cannibalistic party up in the woods.
Yeah, it's going to be bad times for whoever's dinner. And I said whoever is dinner.
Eugene liked to grill, so...
He's out there grilling, chopping up. He turned those carrots into hash. Like, there was nothing left of them.
In like 5 seconds.
But yeah.
What is your, like, one of your favorite lines? There's a main favorite line that everyone loves. Like, I don't want to say what it is because I don't want to, like, ruin it. But it's, like, the main line. But other than that one, is there another line that you like or a scene that you like?
I think the scenes with Eugene are probably my favorite because I really wanted to see more with him. As much as I loved Leslie, I wanted to see more with Eugene and his wife and see, like, what's a day like for them? We've already seen that, like, he's buried out back for a few days while she's sitting around in the house just doing whatever. So what's their day-to-day like? Do they go out in the backyard and practice knife throwing at each other? Or do they practice fighting? What do they do? I just want to see more with them.
Is she pretending to be, like, the victim again? Like, running? Is that their foreplay where she runs to the woods? Because he has a lot of land.
He's got a lot of space out there. So, yeah, that'd be amazing to see what they do.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, I would be interested in that. And definitely, if there was a second movie, I would like to see more of him in it. I really love Nathan Basil's performance. He's just so damn charismatic. And you just fall in love with him. And he's just like a regular-looking guy. He's kind of like, I guess one could consider, he's kind of like the Ted Bundy, you know? Kind of guy.
He doesn't really stand out because he can just blend into the background. But then when you talk to him, it's when you kind of fall under his spell. And you can see how, like, you know, he kind of gets the film crew involved in this and just really talks them into this and makes it seem like it's going to be the coolest thing for their careers when it's really not a good idea to hang out with a guy that's going to be murdering a whole house full of people.
No, there's a scene in the movie, like, towards the end where he's walking them through all the traps. Like, he goes to the house that all these kids are going to be hanging out at, and he booby traps, like, parts of the house and knows, like, what couple or which people he wants to go in certain places based on just what he has set up, you know, on it. Like, why in the movies... Don't the people, like, what was it? Don't they ever fucking, like, jump out the fucking window?
Oh, when he said, why don't they ever, he's nailed all the windows shut. And one of the characters, one of the reporters says, why don't they just break the window out? He goes, huh, yeah, you'd think they would, wouldn't you? And just goes on, like, because you've seen that in so many movies where no one ever broke the window to get out. I love when they show him going around and he's pre-cut all the tree limbs. He's cut them like 3/4 of the way through. So if you're on the top floor and you do get the window open and try to jump out onto the tree limb, it's immediately going to break. They show that he's pre-cut the axes so that he's like, maybe you get one hit with it before the handle breaks. He's like loosened the heads on the sledgehammer.
And like 3 in. He doesn't do the whole camming because he's like, when they're rushing in, they're frantic, whatever, they're going to grab the first thing. So he does like the first 3 or 4. So, which he kind of, I mean, and that's why I had a thing like, well, I don't want to say, but did he know who the target was going to be from the get-go? Because if you're telling, you know, everybody, hey, this is my plan, then they're going to be able to know. But he had a backup plan for the plan.
Yeah.
So he was really fucking prepared because he's like, this is the one I'm going to tell you about, but I have another one.
Look, this is his life. This is like his final, you know? He's getting his PhD in murder tonight. It's going to be my movie, by the way. PhD in murder.
It's going to be a Netflix original. It's going to be freaking up there with Tiger King. It's going to be amazing.
It's going to sell tickets like you wouldn't believe, even though it's on Netflix. People are still going to have to buy tickets.
Wow. I'm sure Netflix is going to really be behind that. It's going to up their own numbers and add more money in their bank. So I give the film... 4 knives.
Yeah, this one's a 4-knifer because I really can't find anything wrong with it. I've seen it so many times, and a lot of times when you still watched one multiple times, you start to realize, oh, there was this and that, and I don't like this. But no, this one, from beginning to end, I always love it.
Yeah, we're big fans of the film, and, you know, for it to be our 100th episode on Podbean, I love that that's going to be right there with that big 100 number, because I wanted to do something that I really enjoyed watching, and we've obviously seen the film so many times, so I didn't want to do one that I had no idea what we were going into, you know, because you never know out there. These are some crazy ass movies. We saw the film because we own it. I don't think it's streaming anywhere.
I don't think so either right now. There's a new deluxe edition available from Scream Factory that upgrades everything, because for a while the DVD was out of print, and then they released a DVD that was bare bones. Like, it took all the commentary and deleted scenes and everything out of it and was just the movie. And this is one that I feel like if you're a fan of it, you really want all the extra stuff, because you want to be able to sit down and like comb through all the deleted scenes and see the making of it and all that kind of stuff. So I'm glad places like Scream Factory are out there doing like preservations on these, because this Blu-ray will last forever, you know?
Yeah, and there's definitely, I did say at the beginning, it's a cult film, and it is. A lot of people love this film, and I love seeing Leslie at conventions, people dressed up as Leslie, because it's just like, yay!
You need to see more of him.
Yeah, because you see like 5,000 Freddies and Jasons and Michaels, but it's good to see a familiar face that may be only familiar to a certain amount of people.
Yeah, I'd just like to see more people do Leslie. That'd be great. Because Jason's played out, and now that some of the conventions are cracking down and you can't really carry weapons in like you used to, the Michael Myers, and they're even banning the Freddy gloves at some of them, you know. Now Leslie is a little bit more, I mean, yeah, he used weapons, but they weren't the main thing, you know.
Yeah, he's not known for his weapon. Yeah, it's just the mask, the overalls, yeah. And then.
So you can get off with anything. You can pull off anything with Leslie, you know, you don't have to have a certain weapon.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this special episode, and stay tuned to the horror.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.